turn again to 1 Samuel, this time chapter 2. 1 Samuel chapter 2. I want to read verse 3. Talk no more so exceedingly proudly. Let not arrogancy come out of your mouth. For, giving the reason, the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by Him actions are weighed. I want to take the thought of the message from those words, for the Lord is a God of knowledge. I want to speak upon the subject of God knows. Theologically, of course, that is referred to as the omniscience of God. It's a truth that is taught and illustrated throughout the Word of God. And as we preach this message, there are several truths, basic truths, concerning God's knowledge that we must remain mindful of. First of all, God is necessarily, it's absolutely imperative that He be a God of knowledge. Knowledge, of course, is inseparable from God. God does not make Himself knowledgeable, no more than He makes Himself God. He is God, and because He is God, He is all-knowing. Knowledge among men is gained. It's gained through age. It's gained through experience. It's gained through instruction. But concerning the knowledge of God, it's not a knowledge that is gained. It's the very nature of God. He receives not His knowledge from anything outside of Himself. He knows not things as a result of seeing them. It's been preached many times by many that God sees all, therefore God knows all. Well, those are two truths. God does see all and God does know all. But God does not know all because He sees all. God knows all because He's God. And God sees all because He's God. So it is an absolute necessity that He be a God of knowledge. God's knowledge also is perfect. It is a perfect knowledge without any ignorance whatsoever. It is infallible. That is, it is without any error. It is a knowledge of absolute certainty. In Isaiah 14 and verse 24, we read, "Surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass." So shall it. That's infallibility. "And as I have purposed, so shall it stand." Now, being perfect, it is immutable. That is, it does not change. Whatever changes either has to increase, decrease, get better, or get worse. God's knowledge is perfect. It does not change. So He's infallible. God's knowledge, of course, is eternal. There has never been a time, nor will there ever be a time, when God does not know all things and know them perfectly. Also, God's knowledge is universal. His knowledge is not limited. It's infinite. There's no end to the knowledge of God. We read in Psalm 147 in verse 5, His understanding is infinite. Because it is infinite, it is therefore incomprehensible. Romans 11 and verse 33, Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are His judgments and His ways past finding out. You and I cannot comprehend perfect knowledge. You and I cannot comprehend the knowledge of God. The Bible teaches that God knows Himself. 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 11, The things of God knoweth no man but the Spirit of God. God knows Himself. He knows Himself perfectly. The Bible declares in many places that God knows His creation. Tells us that He knows the rain, He knows the dew, He knows everything there is to know about a raindrop, He knows everything there is to know about the dew. The Bible says that He knows the ravens and He knows their young. He knows the birds of the air, He knows every star, He knows every blade of grass, He knows every grain of sand. He knows everything that there is to know about every particle of His creation. He perfectly knows everything that He has created, but that's not all. He also knows everything that He could have created, but did not. Do you ever think about that? Things that God could have created, but He didn't. And God knows all about it. So His knowledge is incomprehensible. He knows all the past. He knows all the present. He knows all the future. He knows all the thoughts. He knows all the deeds of His creatures. We read in Job 42 and verse 2, No thought can be withholden from God. God not only knows everything that you and I have done, everything that we will do, every thought that we've ever thought, every thought that we'll ever think, He also knows what we would have done, what we will do, unless He restrains us. He knows what we would have done had He not intervened and restrained us. He knows what we would have thought had He not intervened and restrained us. And it is that aspect of God's perfect knowledge that I want to consider this evening. That God not only knows every deed that we've ever done, every thought that we've ever thought, He knows what we would have done and He knows what we would have thought had He not intervened and had He not restrained us. And as we consider this aspect of God's knowledge, again, keep in mind, God's knowledge is perfect. It's perfect. There's no mistakes. There's no ignorance in the knowledge of God. Again, God knows what we would have done had He not intervened and restrained us. This aspect of God's love is brought out, notice in Genesis chapter 20. Genesis chapter 20. And verse 6. And God said unto him, that would be Abimelech, in a dream, Yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thy heart, for I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore suffered or permitted I thee not to touch her. In Genesis chapter 20, Abimelech took Sarah from Abraham, and then God appeared to Abimelech in verse 3. This is God's intervention. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, Behold, thou art but a dead man, For the woman which thou hast taken, she is a man's wife. We know the story. Abraham lied and said it was a sister. Abimelech, after receiving this message, "You are a dead man," immediately claimed his innocence. Verse 4 and verse 5. And Abimelech had not come near her. And he said, "Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation? Said he not unto me, she is my sister," referring to Abraham. "And she, even she herself said, he is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands have I done this." And then God responded in verse 6, "Yea, I know. Yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thy heart." What God is saying is, Abimelech, I acknowledge and I know that you did not touch her. I know that. And then he proceeds to tell him why he did not touch her. "For I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore suffered or permitted I thee not to touch her." God is saying, Abimelech, I know you did not touch her. But Abimelech, I also know what you would have done had I not kept you from doing it. The perfect knowledge of God. The times are innumerable in our lives that God has withheld us from sinning against Him. The sins of our life, the sins that we have actually committed, are innumerable. And the times that God has kept us from sinning are innumerable. And that is a truth that needs to grip our hearts. And you begin to think about these things. You've got to be pretty brazen to plead any merit to God. It is true that there are sinful acts that we have not done. It's true of all of us. There are sins that we have not committed. But it is also true that God knows what we would have done had He not intervened, had He not restrained us. We have an example of this over in a neighborhood of where we were this morning in 1 Samuel chapter 25. Following the death and burial of Samuel, David moves to the desert of Maon. And there he's in dire circumstances. And he thought of a man by the name of Nabal, who had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep. So it appears that Nabal is a wealthy individual. And David in the past had protected Nabal. So David in these dire circumstances sends messengers to Nabal to ask that he give provision to him and his men. And he appeals to, "I have protected you in the past, Nabal." And Nabal, with utter contempt, refused. Notice verse 10. And Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse?" And then go down to verse 11. "Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed for my shears and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be. Again, David had protected Nabal in the past. So the messengers return to David, tell David what Nabal said, and David is enraged. David is so angered that he gathers about 400 men, and he is going to take by force what he wanted from Nabal, and no doubt kill Nabal. Notice verse 13. And David said unto his men, gird ye on every man his sword. And they girded on every man his sword, and David also girded on his sword. And there went up after David about 400 men, and 200 abode by the stuff. So David, in a fit of rage, is headed toward Nabal. But God intervened and caused one of Nabal's young men to go to Nabal's wife, Abigail, and tell her how that Nabal, with contempt, refused David's request. And she, no doubt, under the direction of the Lord, and in her own mind to avert a disaster, gathered up supplies and gave them to David. David and his men did no harm to Nabal. And David could say, I didn't lay a hand on Nabal. I didn't take a single one of his sheep. I didn't do those things. But what would he have done had not God intervened? What would David have done? Well, we know what he was intending to do. So just think upon what David would have done had not God intervened. Again, he did no harm to Nabal. But God knew what David would have done were it not for his intervention. Were not for his restraint. So yes, even though David could stand and say, Lord, I didn't do any wrong to Nabal, God could say, yes, David, but I kept you from it. You would have. We have another example. Again, 1 Samuel 28 and 29. After David had departed from God and intentionally and with deliberation went and lodged with the Philistines, he finds himself aligned against the people of God. Chapter 28, verses 1 and 2, And it came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish said unto David, Know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men. And David said to Achish, Surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do. And Achish said to David, Therefore will I make thee the keeper of mine head forever. Chapter 29, verses 1 and 2. Now the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek. And the Israelites pitched by a fountain which is in Jezreel. And the lords of the Philistines passed on by hundreds and by thousands, but David and his men passed on in the reward with Achish. Then said the princes of the Philistines, you see, David is in line with the enemies. And that's when God moved upon the heart of the Philistines to say, you know, I'm not so sure we can trust David. I think it would be best if he went back to Ziklag. Think upon what David might have done had not God intervened. It is true that David never entered into battle. with Israel. But God knew what David would have done had he not intervened in that situation. Be sure of this. God knows. God knows. Not only our every thought and our every act, but He knows what we would have thought and what we would have done were not for His intervention and restraint. Another example, 1 Kings 19. You don't have to turn there, but you see Elijah fleeing from Jezebel. He's at a point in his life where he requests from God that he die. But God came, and it says that God touched him. And God ministered to him. And Elijah was revived. You see, Elijah was down in the depths, way down. And Elijah was ready to give up serving God until God came. Now think how far Elijah might have sunk had not God intervened, had not God restrained him. It is true, Elijah did not quit on God. But it's also true that God knew what he would have done. He was about to until God showed up. So yes, you can say Elijah did not quit on God. But there's another way to look at it. God knows what he would have done had he not showed up. And I believe Elijah would have quit had not God shown up. So God knows our every sinful act. That in itself ought to greatly humble us. And he knows every sinful act that he's kept us from. Again, our sins are innumerable. God knows every departure that we have ever made from Him. He knows every single departure, whether it just be a departure for a second in our brain. Some foolish thought just flashes through your brain that and can be a departure from God just for a second. God knows every single aspect of that. But he also knows every departure he's kept us from. God's kept us from innumerable departures. Each one of us has innumerable backslidings. And each one of us has been kept from innumerable backslidings. We've all gone away at some point in our life from God. And God knows how far away we would have gone had He not intervened. Think of the times that you have departed from God, but you came back. Why did you come back? Because God brought you back. But how far would we have gone? That's scary to think about. If you know anything about the human nature, it's a scary thought to think how far we might have gone. We don't know. But He does. He knows how far we would have gone. So I find it difficult to plead with God on the basis of, well, Lord, I haven't departed from you in this instance. There's only one reason why. Because God's kept you from it. God knows our every discouragement. He knows our every depression. He also knows how discouraged and depressed we would have been had He not intervened and restrained us. People make foolish comments. Well, I don't see how a child of God can get that depressed. Well, they can. A child of God can go into the depths that any lost person can go into. But God keeps us from it many times. God knows every trouble and sorrow that we've brought into our lives. And He knows every trouble and sorrow that we would have brought into our lives had He not intervened, had He not restrained us. If you and I would just stop and think of the troubles and sorrows we would have brought into our life, but God intervened. God intervened. God knows every foolish and destructive decision that we've ever made. He also knows every foolish and destructive decision that He's kept us from. He knows all about it. Each one of us, again, we can point to certain sins, and we can honestly say, I've never done that. I've never done that. No one here has robbed a bank. No one here has killed anyone. And on we could go. We can say, I've never done that. We can say, I've never done such and such to my spouse or my children. But may we also know, God knows what we would have done had He not intervened, had He not restrained us. And here we are, members of one of the Lord's churches, trying to serve God, not out living in the mud holes of the world. Why? Because God has intervened time and time again. Because God has restrained us time and time again. How many times we, like David, in the case of Nabal, went off in a fit of rage, but God stopped us. May have sent an Abigail into our lives to do something, but God intervened. Man can do some horrible things in a fit of rage and a fit of anger. And we've all been there. We've all been there. We've gone off. We're going to tell so-and-so or whatever. But God intervened. God restrained. This aspect of God's knowledge exalts the gracious and merciful acts of God toward us. Again, Genesis 20, verses 4 and 5. He pleads his innocence, and he was correct. And in many cases, we can plead, I didn't do that. I didn't do that particular thing. But God's response was, I withheld thee from sinning against me. Every sin we've ever committed is a shameful thing. But how thankful we ought to be of all the times that God has withheld us from sinning against Him. And considering what sin we would have committed were it not for God's intervention and restraint, we realize that we have no merit to plead. We must be with the publican, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. Even when we do what's right, that needs to be our plea. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. What good we have done, we would not have done were it not for God. And what evil we have not done, that also is of God. Now, in light of the fact that God knows everything that He's kept us from, what we would have done had He not, how amazing God's grace. How amazing the grace of God in our lives. In light of God's knowledge, not only of the sins that we have committed, but the ones that we would have committed were it not for His intervention and restraint, how abundant the mercies of God in our lives. You see, this aspect of God's knowledge exalts the grace and the mercy of God. When we think about God's knowledge of our sins, which we have committed, and then we think about what we would have done were it not for God's intervention and restraint, how astounding the long-suffering of God. And we just cannot comprehend how gracious, how merciful, how long-suffering God is to us. In light of God's knowledge, not only of the sins we have committed, but of the ones we would have committed were it not for His intervention and restraint, how marvelous it is that God would bless us in any way whatsoever. It's a marvelous thing. But also this aspect of the knowledge of God, not only does it exalt the grace and the mercy and the long-suffering and the blessings of God, but it encourages some acts toward God. First of all, the very fact that God knows everything that I've ever done ought to greatly humble us. That God knows every thought and why we thought what we thought. He knows every thought that went through our brain before we even thought it. That ought to greatly humble us. And then when we think, yes, the sins that we've committed are innumerable. And then we begin to think of the innumerable sins that God has kept us from. Just because He intervened in our lives and He restrained us, that ought to immediately humble us. Pride cannot thrive in the realization of this aspect of God's knowledge. There cannot be pride when you have the realization God knows everything I've ever done. God knows every thought that's gone through this mind. And God knows what I would have done. Even though I didn't do it, He knows what I would have done had He not intervened. In the realization of that, there can be no pride. There can't be a sense of self-importance when we come to the realization God knows. There can't be self-righteousness and self-exaltation when we live in the realization God knows. When that realization comes upon us, self-importance, self-righteousness, self-exaltation, it just withers. It's gone. This truth ought to fill us with thankfulness. I mean, we can't thank Him enough that He knows every sin I've committed, and yet I'm still here. He knows what I would have done had he not intervened, and I'm still here. That's a testimony of the grace and mercy and long-suffering of God. And oh, how thankful we ought to be. It ought to fill us with praise. He knows. He knows. I mean, we take comfort in when we're in a trial and we say, God knows all about it, and He does. But God also knows all about us. And there's not a whole lot of comfort in that fact by itself. But there's comfort in the fact that, yes, He knows all about me. And here I am. I'm still here. I'm not in hell. That ought to fill us. That ought to fill us with praise. It ought to fill us with worship. It ought to fill us with a desire to serve God. So just think tonight upon this aspect of God's knowledge. In closing, in the book of Ezra, chapter 9, verse 13, the same truth is presented in Job 11, verse 6 also. But in Ezra 9, verse 13, "And after all that has come upon us for our evil deeds and for our great trespass, seeing that Thou, our God, has punished us less than our iniquities deserve." That's always so. God does chasten His own. And we're thankful He does. But He always gives us in His chastening less than we deserve. Always. Any day spent outside of eternity in hell is less than you deserve. God is so gracious. God is so merciful. Oh, that this aspect of God's knowledge. Yes, I haven't done this, I haven't done that, I haven't done that. But think what you might have done had not God intervened. Perhaps you haven't been in the hog pen with the prodigal son. It's only because God intervened. There isn't anyone here that can say, I've never started moving in the direction of the hog pen. We've all moved in that direction. If you haven't ended up there, it's only because God intervened and God restrained. And may I say, the prodigal son would have even gone further than the hog pen were it not for God speaking to his heart while he was in that hog pen. So this ought to fill our hearts with thanksgiving and with humility. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us, verse 6.